Yes, sir. Wait.
This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Welcome to another edition of Hashtag Politrix. The comments on last week's installment of our Politrix segment featured another observation on our analyst's styling. Thankfully, he doesn't always just bring along a nice piece from his wardrobe. He also occasionally brings along someone from his little black book. So, with this week's Politrix Plus, please welcome Botsangwilwa and a very special guest, Dr. Terry Tsilane. Brati, we used to gym at the same gym, so why gym, Brati? He's an international electoral expert, founder of the IEMSA, the Institute of Election Management Services. Brati Tsilane is our guest today. Brati.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me.
Oh, grand.
Grand, and... Nice introduction.
Yes, sir.
However, I'm not yet a doctor. I'm still working towards that direction.
Oh, you're not there yet.
and that should be my fault. I thought he has done so much work beyond doctorate level.
Also, we're no
more. Yeah, but don't worry. Nobody will sue him or take him to task for that. You know, I feel like an outsider now. Is that the reason I'm sitting a little bit far? Because I don't go to the gym.
This side, catch
me. Okay. And you know, I must tell the viewers and followers how Brateri told me, supported you when you said, I'm getting old because I'm losing my eyesight. Yeah. And he says, why am I surprised? But anyway, thanks, Fresh, and thanks, Brateri, and thanks for honoring the invite. It is actually a pleasure to have you.
I think before Rikenya Brateri, let's talk about Speaker, Honorable Speaker, on special leave. Pretoria High Court dismisses her urgent bid to interdict her arrest.
Yep.
So what's next? What happens next, Busan?
Well, next, Fresh, is what was supposed to happen before.
Yes.
Generally, look, this was unheard of. This was very upset. And it was never in the history of the legal or judicial process in the country that somebody goes to court, number one, on an urgent application basis to try and stop the police or arresting authority not to arrest you.
Sure.
for something that you do not know. And I've said it last week on the show that, one, I don't understand the legal advisors or representatives of the Speaker of Parliament.
Sure.
Or the National Speaker to rush to court, and I use the word rush, comfortably, to try and stop the police or the prosecuting authority from doing their job before it's done.
Mm.
How did they know that the case is weak, that has been the debate?
Yes.
Because there were two reasons that she went to court, if not three. One, they claimed that it was in the media, so the case is weak. You can't rely on the media until you have the docket itself. Actually, not even the docket, the court file, because the docket belongs to the police services.
Yes, sir.
Secondly, you can't say the case is weak when you don't have the details and their content. You have not yet been charged.
Mm.
But for the Speaker of Parliament, and I agree fully with the judge, to rise and say she is an important person, it was actually very disturbing to ordinary citizens like us to say, because you've got status in the society and you regard yourself as an important person, therefore you cannot be arrested like normal citizens. She is supposed to be the person who upholds the constitution of the country and the application of the laws of the country. And
sure.
I've said last week, she is the number two citizen. If something happens, touch wood, nothing will happen to President Ramaphosa. And Parliament has to put somebody in charge when, in absence of the president, it will be the Speaker of Parliament who holds forth until a new president is elected or the deputy president is elevated. But it has to be a parliamentary process. Therefore, she cannot be immune to the ordinary judicial processes of the country.
Mm.
And I think the court decision was correct, and the damning part is that it was with cost for both councils. The matter was dismissed as, one, not urgent; two, it did not have the meat, it didn't have content. Why did the speaker rush to parliament? But what we are waiting for as a nation during the course of this week is for the speaker to... You know, I live in Centurion, and you could have seen the media houses in my area, because they are camping. since last night.
Waiting for an arrest.
Because the police station proximity,
yes.
It's the Littleton police station in sure. Centurion, sure. And for her to hand herself over or for the police to go and pick her up and bring her to the police station, I don't think it will be that clumsy because now it's already in a public forum. She should just do herself a kind thing, drive with her vehicle to the police station. The NPA have already indicated that they will not oppose bail and she will be treated with decency like they're supposed to do. You know, there's another thing. Think of human rights in this country. Some of us, we get cuffed and thrown into the police van and you are driven to the police charge office. You sleep. I've slept in the police cell several times in my life in post-democracy.
Sure.
And I didn't go and blow my horn to say I'm a career diplomat or I'm a public figure. If I've done wrong and I've broken the law, all rules and laws of the country must be applicable to me.
Absolutely.
So we are waiting for that, but there's another element. The DA request to the deputy speaker that they must now go and discuss or contest whether it should be, you know, impeached or not. And this is one thing that we should tell our viewers and followers or subscribers. That's a completely separate process. It has absolutely nothing to do with the police, the Hawks, or NPA. It's a parliamentary process that any political party could have brought to the book. And the deputy speaker accepted it. But again, disturbing for democracy. Did you see how the African National Congress, which is the ruling party, lambasted the deputy speaker for accepting the DA request without consulting with Luthuli House? The deputy speaker was doing his national duties.
Sure.
He didn't have to go to Luthuli House to seek permission.
But remember, I even spoke about it, the fact that... I didn't expect him to say, okay, let's do it.
Well, he's effective. What if he's doing his job? I mean, for me, he's doing his job.
Yeah.
What would be the reason that the deputy speaker could have not accepted the request from the Democratic Alliance, which is the official opposition party? I don't see any reason to do so. I think the DA also rushed because it's speculations and allegations.
Sure.
If I was the DA, I would have waited for the speaker to be arrested because they acted on the basis that there was a warrant of search issued by the court to her private home. I think they should wait until she's been charged. Like the ANC have already said, if the speaker is charged formally, then their step-aside rule will apply in Luthuli House towards the speaker. So it's a wait-and-see situation. But look, it looks like the NPA in this instance, they've got all their ducks in a proper row.
Sure.
It looks like they've got a solid case, and it's very scary that the number two citizen of the country, I regard the speaker as number two citizen, is facing counts, you know, more than 10 counts of you know, level 5, you know, like the crime level, it's 5, which is a very serious crime level in the country. But it's a wait-and-see situation.
Yes,
but I'm glad for South African citizens that justice prevailed. She was not treated with kid gloves or different from any other normal citizen. And for me, that is, you know, the judicial process that has taken place and protection of everybody is equal in front of the law. We should all be treated equal.
And nobody is entitled to special treatment or to say, but if I go to jail, my age this, my age that. Molato haubole.
Well,
and I personally don't believe an age should be a reason why you can get away with whatever crime.
Well, as a nation, if we could lock up a former president who was 80 when he was sent to prison, the Speaker of Parliament is still there. But again, Fresh, we shouldn't look at age, your status, and who you are in the society.
Sure.
We should stand up as a nation and say a person is alleged to have committed a crime. And it's an allegation at the moment until it's proven otherwise. But again, when you say you've got status, when you committed crime, or when you conducted yourself in a manner that is unbecoming, did your position and status, did you take into consideration that as a person, I cannot found myself? And I've made an example many times to say, I've been a senior transport official and, you know, a border management official for many years. One of the things that I've taken a conscious decision when I joined the transport family was that I will never be arrested for drinking driving. I still love my wine.
Sure.
I still love driving, but I don't combine the two. It was a conscious decision I took after being exposed to the number of deaths in on our roads. And it's things that if you think you are a figure in the society, an important person in the society, conduct and behave yourself in a manner that will not get you into trouble with the law. I know we are human beings, we are not perfect, sure. But yeah, unfortunately, as a nation, we found ourselves with the Speaker of the National Assembly facing serious, you know, allegations of corruption and maladministration. Yes, it's an unfortunate situation.
I think we can move to elections. Our guest, Bra Teritselane, is here. You've overseen, what, 4 elections now, Bra Teri?
About 8.
8. Okay, so 4 national, 4 municipal. Yeah.
And as well, I think you know, in the continent, you have seen that. But in moving to that, I think we can introduce the election, you know, issue about Terry by actually firstly congratulating. And I want to hear Bra Teri's opinion in the smooth transition in Senegal, especially, you know, we know the ECOWAS challenges at the moment. But we congratulate President Aye. Of Senegal, but I want to congratulate the Senegalese as well as the opposition or the outgoing administration, which went into coalition for a smooth handover. But Terry, your opinion in the situation in Senegal and the what is being generally regarded as a smooth transition?
I think it augurs well for the future of the African continent in many respects. Firstly, the fact that all the election observation missions that went to Senegal to observe these elections have come out saying that the elections were free and fair. And the fact also that we have now the youngest leader in the African continent heading up such an important country. I think it's an important thing, and there are many things that we can learn in the continent, because the continent has always been bedeviled by very old leadership of people who can't even walk, who don't even understand the issues. And then hopefully the young person will actually be able to bring in the energy and enthusiasm in terms of governance and the way things have got to be run.
In fact, where it was that the former president wanted to hang on to power, because there have been oil discoveries and deals have been struck, and he possibly wanted to have his hand in the cookie jar. So now President Faye is even saying we need to relook at all of those contracts.
Well, Fresh, let's look. It doesn't come as a surprise what is happening in the ECO with France involved in that region. And earlier on, you mentioned how actually President Faye spent time in jail towards the election. So he couldn't,
he came out of jail and beat everyone.
The most interesting part of it, Bra Teri, is that the coalition, because the previous president went into coalition with other parties, so he single-handedly beat the coalition of old people. You know, we always apologize with Fresh that we are not anti-ageism and old people, but the reality has hit home that Africa has its first youngest multilingual educated president at age 44 who has gone against, you know, the tide. And he came, and look at what is happening in the whole of ECOWAS. It's Niger, all those cool countries. But this one is important for us because he went into power due to elections or due to an electoral process. So I don't know your opinion on what Fresh is raising to say the previous president wanted to hang into power. But I saw his statement of conceding to the defeat and welcoming the president-elect who has been inaugurated during the course of this past week.
Well, the outcome of the results was such that it was not going to be possible for him to contest the outcome. Because also, if you contest the outcome, then the irregularities must be so stuck to the extent that, you know, you believe that if you go to court, you are likely to win an election.
Okay.
So in this case, I don't think there was any case that could be taken to the Superior Court in Senegal to contest the outcome of the results of the elections.
Generally, how's the health of elections and how elections are conducted on the continent, generally?
We still have many challenges. Incidentally, sometime last week I was sitting with a former commissioner of Malawi who was telling me her story about how she was arrested because the current president did not like some of the people who had actually been there before. So, you know, you still have incidents.
The commissioner of the electoral...
Electoral commission, yeah. She was arrested for some time under the pretext that she did not stop for the motorcade of the president.
But she... Interesting ones we have in the continent.
And she was not even driving. She was being driven by... you know, bodyguard as well as a driver.
A chauffeur, yes.
Yeah, and but they still managed to imprison her. And she is now here in South Africa trying to sort out her life following her stint in prison. You know, so, yeah, you've got those kind of incidents where in the continent, even those who are running the elections are not free to manage the elections in such a manner that you can have a very credible election.
Sure.
And I think that is one of the weaknesses that we still have in the continent. But generally speaking, we are beginning to move in a direction that I think is positive. South Africa, to a large extent, has really been exemplary in terms of how it manages its processes.
Sure.
And I think the transparency that we have put in our system is the one that really provides credibility and integrity to the whole process.
Now, Terry, I'm asking you this as an election authority. So this past Easter, I was in China, in Shanghai, and one of my hosts was telling me about how, because he's been in and out of Shanghai for the last 30 years, and that 30 years ago, Shanghai was almost nothing, if you will, but that they've come so far in the last 30 years. And he attributes a lot of the growth to the fact that they don't have democracy. Things happen because they don't have democracy. And then you also have people who say democracy is actually an African. Why are we imposing democracy on ourselves when we've been doing things differently? What are your views on that? Can democracy be a stumbling block?
No, democracy is a very good system.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, all of us have got to really understand that there is no alternative to democracy, that dictatorship has got its own negative consequences in terms of the capacity of individuals to grow and develop, but also even in terms of the country. The fact that you've got a particular model in China does not mean that dictatorship, and then look at dictatorship holistically in every areas where there's been dictatorship. There's been regress in quite a number of areas. People have been killed. People are disappearing, which is not really good for a citizen to live under those kind of circumstances. But it is important also, we also emphasize the fact that public representatives have got a very important role to play in terms of promoting the notion of democracy, because their conduct and behavior will indicate as to whether people trust a democratic project.
Yes.
If you've got leaders who, once they get into power, they look after their own interest and forget completely about people who have elected them, and they see the five-year period within which they're supposed to be operating as a period where they can amass wealth for themselves and their families and their friends, that will definitely discredit the whole democratic project. And I think the question is actually the rule of law, more than democracy. We've got to have a situation where if there is corruption, that those who are corrupt, irrespective of their positions, are imprisoned.
Sure.
There's got to be an example. And then if we don't do that, we're going to find more and more people coming, taking chances, and you know, basically discrediting the whole process. And I think that is where South Africa is today. If you look at quite a number of people, let's look at the Zondo Commission, what Zondo Commission has revealed, and then how come the majority of those people are still in power? We should not be having people like that who have got questionable credentials because of their conduct and behavior, especially because they were exposed in a commission of inquiry that was headed by now the
the head of the judiciary.
Mm. I have a different view and base it on what Fresh was asking.
Mm.
It, you know, after listening to you and Tatetsilan, the people of this continent and focusing on the continent, on maybe to some extent to Latin America, all the developing countries, you have mentioned how those in political position or in power amass wealth and they conduct acts of corruption in their families. And it has been the trend, and South Africa being the so-called glorified democracy, that is, you have said our IEC is one of the good examples in our democratic process. But it didn't save us or made us to be immune from that process, because we find ourselves in the same situation whereby those in political positions, and not only power, you know, you look at it from the number one citizen of the country to the lowest ranking official in a municipality, are involved in acts of corruption one way or the other, or alleged and involved in those processes. But for me, the challenge is, and this is what the general public and general citizens will complain about, it is because there is no proper alignment between the judicial system as well as the democratic process. Mm. Where you have the judicial system that and the policing system that is not effectively applying the punishment of the rules and regulations.
Mm.
People can stand up and say, despite the Zondo Commission, there's been so many commissions in this country after 1996, when the Constitution was amended, Constitution was adopted. But we still have to see, except one or two cases. I can mention the case of Mr. Tony Engeni, which was slapped on the wrist as well. But how many of politically connected people or politically important people, we have seen them, you know, charged, prosecuted, and jailed for even the proceeds of corruption being taken from them.
Mm.
We see from third parties, you understand? For example, in the most recent day, we have seen the name of Mr. Edwin Sodi, who is said to be politically connected to the ruling party, being mentioned as a benefactor, legally or illegally, so it's still an allegation. But we don't see those who facilitated, who made it possible for him to arrive at the stage, because clearly he could have not amassed the wealth of billions of rands without political help. And I think that's where the challenge is, that our judicial system, it is not effective enough. We may have laws written very well, but it's not effective enough to can punish those who are found wanting, especially from political positions. I think it will take a turn once we start putting those who occupied political position in orange or red overalls, whatever the color is being used.
Mm.
If we don't put those people behind bars, then everybody will think to go into politics is a career. To be corrupt in politics, it's also a career. And for me, that's the challenge. And you look at the entire continent, that vis-a-vis the dictators, that Etzelani is saying dictatorship is not good. I always say, I don't know where do we compare democracy with what? Let's look at progressive countries. I still regard Paul Kagame, you know, the captain, as a dictator. General Kagame is a dictator, you know, to some people. The democratic process in Rwanda, in my books, and I've lived and served in that country, it is not as pure as the democracy we see in South Africa or the U.S. We look at President Mugabe, who was in power for over 30, 40 years. We look at Colonel Gaddafi, where there was no democracy in Libya, but Libya was the most progressive country under the dictatorship of Gaddafi.
At what cost?
In the continent. Look, the cost came for his life and destroyed, but the dictatorship, they benefited. If we look at figures and facts, that's like, dictatorship in Libya benefited Libyans. The minute the West interfered in Libya, killed Gaddafi and destroyed Libya, look at the Libyan people today. They had free quality education, free quality water in the middle of the desert, free housing and basic income in accordance to your qualifications from the state. And for me, I would rather live in a country with a dictator who cares for the people. And I'm borrowing from your words that says, politicians must do things for the people.
Mm.
Then we will not be. I wouldn't be thinking democracy or dictatorship or communism or socialism once I know our safety, housing, education, health, and basic human rights. For me, that's my opinion. That's why I'm not anti-democracy, but I'm saying if it's not policed as prescribed, then we have a problem as a nation.
Well, I could say also that we must not confuse personalities with a system, because If you take, for instance, a personality such as Arap Moi, who was a dictator, what did he do for the country? He ended up actually having more money than the country.
True.
So dictators are not necessarily good people. But also what you have in dictatorship is lack of accountability that is almost like legalized to the extent that, you cannot do anything. But here in the case that you've mentioned, at least we are calling for accountability and for people, for action to be taken against those people. You would not do that under a dictatorship. So if you've got a dictator that is not working in the interest of the masses, what do you do? What recourse do you have other than to have a coup? Because you would not be allowed an opportunity to even speak. There would not be freedom of speech.
So
there would not be a situation where dissent is allowed. You all have got to stick to one opinion, and that opinion is the opinion of the dictator. Okay. And, so let's not confuse the issue of personalities with the systems.
And inadvertently, your so-called benevolent dictator eventually almost behaves like this is a family business. My son is next.
We are seeing it in Uganda at the moment.
Yeah.
I think President Museveni, I must say, he's one of my favorite leaders in the continent, but I think he has gone overboard. As recently as this week, he appointed the daughter as the governor of the Reserve Bank.
Sure.
The central bank, and the son is the general in the army, and the other son and the son-in-law. It becomes a problem once leaders start creating a family dynasty.
Sure.
In that situation. And as Ntatetsela had said, when family members and friends are benefiting.
Mm.
And that's my fear, that South Africa may end up in the situation, but not in the family in this instance. Because we don't see it happening more as family. We see it happening more in political parties, particularly the ruling party. We don't have experience of any other party doing, because we have never had another party ruling this country.
Sure.
But we have seen how the BEE contracts, the tenders and other, they've been evolving around the hands of the comrades from the African National Congress, which didn't benefit the society at large. And that is my greatest fear, to say once, in South Africa, it's different. We don't have a human being a dictator. We've got a democratically elected political party dictating the process. But because it has never been challenged, because nobody has ever got anywhere close democratically and following process to unseating the ruling party.
Sure. I think let's bring it home, Prateri. The MK party says they will appeal the IEC decision to remove former President Zuma from the candidates list. What are your thoughts on what's happening with the MK party, this back and forth with the IEC? And also, because it seems like there's almost like a broken telephone, like we're not hearing each other.
But they've appealed already.
Yes.
I think the due date was Tuesday, the 2nd.
Sure.
They've already filed their appeal. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so... firstly, the beauty about the South African electoral system is that when you're not happy with a particular decision, you can appeal that to the next level.
So,
which basically allows people to interrogate the decision that was taken at lower levels.
Mm.
And I think they're within their rights to be doing what they're doing. But I must also say that having looked at their submission, I think they may have a case.
Mm.
They may have a case, and I'll tell you why. Apart from the details in terms of the merits of the case, let's just look at the procedure. I, incidentally, long before this case, sent the CEO of the IEC a message to say, I saw in the communique that you had sent out, and I think you erroneously referred to Section 47 of the Constitution as the basis upon which you are going to be considering the appeals or objections. And then he insisted they are right. And I think there is a certain level of complacency that has set in sometimes with the Commission. And I'm saying this thing because I had to sit down and then read that section very intensely. And then this is what it says. It refers to membership of the National Assembly. Now, membership of the National Assembly and candidates in an election are two different things. And then, so the IEC, in other words, is not really supposed to be managing the membership of the National Assembly.
Yes.
It's supposed to be managing the candidates
and qualifications
in the elections and the qualifications of those candidates. Now, I went through the definitions. Mm. The definition of a candidate in an election is defined as a candidate in terms of Section 27 of the Electoral Act.
Mm.
Now, that candidate is a normal candidate who's contesting for the elections. But when we go to Section 47, it talks about candidacy for National Assembly.
Oh.
So those are two different issues.
Mm.
And so who are the candidates for the National Assembly?
Mm.
Candidates for the National Assembly are the 400 members. Before they are sworn in, they are candidates for the National Assembly.
Mm.
But candidates in the election, there are more than 8,000.
So
you can't use Section 47 to
preemptively.
Yes.
So that particular aspect is supposed to be left to the National Assembly to create its own systems to deal with that particular aspect.
Mm.
That is the first.
So are you saying former President Zuma should be on the ballot? Or should be allowed to be on the ballot?
No. That is actually even a different question altogether.
Mm.
He will be in the ballot. Mm. There is nothing that prevents him from being in the ballot. The fact that his candidacy is questioned, even if he's removed, the requirement to be on a ballot says a leader of a political party as face will appear in the ballot paper. Mm. So look up at the IFP. The IFP might actually be using a dead person.
Yeah, actually they are. If you look at their billboards and placards.
Yeah.
But this is the reason, Fresh, I had said for our viewers and for clarity, because we regard this platform as a more educative platform and informative platform. When people started making legal noise about this thing, I didn't see the submission of the MK to this day, except face value that was on the media. But I personally also went to read the Section 47 of the Constitution, and I fully agree with you. The challenge becomes when the IEC it's having an just overreach. For me, it's an overreach. They've stepped out of their boundaries to go and make a determination on behalf of the National Assembly. And this, I'm glad you have explained it, in simple terms, that the 400 candidates based on the party votes and proportions, now we even have independent candidates coming in, before they are sworn in as members of the National Assembly, that's when the National Assembly regulations will come in, or the Constitution will kick in. But there's also a legal challenge that has come into force to say, when we even read that Section 47, and this is where legal minds, I don't know your legal background, but this is where legal minds were playing between the civil as well as the criminal offender. I'm with you when you say there is nothing stopping the MK party or any other party to use the face of any candidate they may prefer. And this is the understanding that people don't like. But there's been a debate, and there's a legal scholar who wrote an opinion, a very lengthy, detailed opinion, defining what is a criminal offense, what is an offense, and all that. And I wanted to hear your view, Riga, if you have seen that scholar's paper on Mr. Zuma was convicted for a civil offense, not a criminal offense, and therefore there's differentiation. I'm fully aware, and I'm raising this, being fully aware that the IEC requirements, it's that, or the National Assembly as well, is that 12 months imprisonment without an option for fine, and a reduced sentence. That part is very clear. But the issue is the Constitution or the law in this instance, the electoral law, talking about an offense equally as any offense? Because I may be sitting here having an offense of overspeeding.
Mm.
Is that a criminal offense? Or somebody may sit here having an offense of not paying his municipal bill because it's a commercial offense for the services rendered? And that's the part I wanted to seek clarity on.
Yeah, I'm going to come to that particular question. But I also wanted to emphasize the following. When we look at Section 47, we must also look at it in totality. In terms of the exclusions, under what circumstances can a person be excluded from being a member of the National Assembly? They say any person who is in the employ of state, in other words, all teachers who are candidates cannot be members of the National Assembly. A person who is a member of the provincial legislature cannot be a member of the National Assembly. Permanent members of the National Council of Provinces cannot be members of assembly. But why am I mentioning this particular aspect? They emphasize this issue that the candidates in an election are different from members of the National Assembly and candidacy for National Assembly. So whereas you can stand as a teacher in an election, when it gets to the National Assembly, you've got to forfeit that position. In other words, you've got to resign. But the IEC can say, because these are the exclusions, we're going to remove you because you're a teacher or you're in the employ of the state, which is the provision that they're using, which is Section 47. You can just go to one aspect. But here is also another issue. The commission is well aware that it does not have the power that it is trying to implement.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it did have the power, it was actually going to have due diligence on all the candidates who were there.
Exactly.
It was not going to be leaving this thing to objections.
Public comments and objections, yeah. Yes. Mm.
They were going to be saying, we've got a report on each and every person so that you don't have the Makwarela situation. You remember Makwarela, the mayor of...
The mayor of...
Of Tswane,
yes.
Of Tswane.
Who was regarded
as insolvent.
Mm.
But who got a free pass. How did he get that free pass? He got that free pass because the IEC does not do due diligence on candidates.
Are they required by law prescribed to do that due diligence?
Surely the party should do it. I'm saying if 47, if they think that they've got to comply with Section 47, in Section 47 they've got the power to implement it, it means they must apply it. And how do you apply it? Mm. If you are saying this is your power, and then it says these are the exclusions, how are you going to make sure that you comply with it without looking at these people, whether they comply, whether they qualify or they don't qualify? The starting point would be to have a spreadsheet and start looking at all the issues that disqualify people and look at each and every individual and say, sir, you don't qualify to be here.
So,
ma'am, you don't qualify to be here because you are this, because you are that, because you are that. You are excluded.
Well, that's where it comes to my overreach. You still have to respond to other things, overreach. So having have listened to you, I think there's a serious overreach from the IEC. And it's very worrying that such a critical institution, that has done tremendously good work, you know, for over the years, that... Even where, you know, the law is not cut in stone, you understand? Sometimes there's gray areas, but that's where, in my view, it's important to consult the experts. Bontate Tselane are there as experts.
Sure.
And even if it's not him, because he has been the vice chairperson of the IEC before, maybe the IEC is not comfortable in consulting, but any other constitutional law expert or electoral expert could have been consulted, then we avoid being in this situation because it is going to look very clumsy politically, if I can tell you now, having have listened to Ntate Tselane and having have applied my mind, it's going to be very clumsy and you know, pardon me, worrying about what's going to happen. You know, we are giving one political party, the MK, free ride, you know, to us. Every week they are getting free rides, and that other parties are not benefited too. But I just needed to make that comment before I allow you to move to the next
now
point.
Now, coming to your issue, and I'm going to try to comment based on very limited information in terms of the period that the former president spent in prison. The legislation says that you should have been convicted for a period of 12 months and above for you to be excluded without an option of fine.
Yes.
In other words, to be excluded. Now, let's compare two cases that are almost similar. In 2009, again, there's a matter that went to the Electoral Court. By that time, the chairperson of the Electoral Court was Justice Mutia. It was involving Mrs. Mandela. There was an objection about her candidacy. And then how did they resolve it? Ultimately,
The objection was dismissed by the Electoral Court on the basis that the conviction of Mrs. Mandela cannot be regarded as an effective term to be regarded as having been completed.
Okay.
Because she ended up not going to prison,
okay.
In the first instance. So President Zuma went to prison, and that's why I'm saying, you know, this relates now to the merits of the case. He went to prison for 3 months instead of 15 months.
Okay.
Instead of 12 months.
Yes, now it was 15 actually.
I'm saying
sentenced to 15.
If the legislation says 12 months without an option of a fine.
Oh, okay.
And
yes.
Then he spent 3 months. Is the pardoning of the president, by President Ramaphosa?
Ramaphosa, yes.
Is that period regarded as having effectively been served? Or not.
But is the issue the sentence or the time spent?
I think this is where Bratieri says it depends on the merit of the case. But if there's a
question. My understanding is the sentence.
The sentence, yeah, that was my understanding.
Not how much time
you spent. But look, it's a challenge. For me, colleagues, it's neither here nor there. I think this is where I come in politically. One, and I don't know why people are, I think they are playing to the gallery into Ntate Zuma's hands. Ntate Zuma is 81. He's enjoying the benefits of being an ex-president. And we have earlier on, Ntate Zilane has explained how you cannot be a benefactor or an employee. He's no longer an employee of the state, he's no longer the president, but he's continued to receive the benefits. I do not see President Zuma forfeiting those benefits of being the former head of state to go and be an ordinary MP, because he doesn't qualify at the moment to be the president of the republic unless we amend the constitution. He has served 2 terms and the cooling off period hasn't passed. But I don't see President Zuma abandoning those benefits of being a former head of state to go and be an ordinary MP who will probably be taking home 900,000 per annum. And for me, that's what I was saying. Politically, I don't think the opposition, and by the way, for the record to our viewers and followers, I've listened to the IEC chairperson as well as the CEO, Chief Electoral Officer, saying it was a member of the public who filed. Contrary to public belief that it was the African National Congress, no, it is not. According to the IEC, it was a member of the public who filed that objection. You could have been a member of the public from any other political party.
Sure.
But I think the ruling party and all other parties, well, it has been the ANC so far, they are not doing themselves justice to be following on this matter of President Zuma when the odds, you know, are against them and are demonstrating that he is not going to. He is the face, you know. And I've called Ntate Zuma as the mascot of the MK party. He's the face of the party. I don't see him going to sit in back benches of parliament and wanting to debate with their former colleagues and old people when he has been saying, can we shift and make way for the young ones like it has happened in Senegal at the moment? So, you know, that for me, that was my comment towards this whole process.
So we are running out of time, but before we wrap up, Bratieri, former Secretary General of the ANC, Ace Magashule, alluded to the fact that an election is stealable. Is an election stealable?
Human beings are fallible and therefore are prone to all sorts of pressures. But you've got to trust the system, and then I trust the system that is there, that if anything untoward were to happen, it was going to be very easy to identify the problem and then deal with that particular problem. So I don't think I can discount the fact that there could be an individual who has got their own agenda, who will want to favor one political party or the other. But in terms of the systems are there.
So the checks and balances.
Absolutely.
The entire way.
I had friends saying the last one. Let this one, which is a thorn for me, you are one of the people who recently had said, and based on the fact that we've put in, that taking into consideration the nature of the elections we have, the three ballot papers, the three candidates, and the volume or the number that we are faced with, maybe the president could have considered to you know, postpone the elections. Okay, they are proclaimed at the moment. There's no chance of postponing them. But despite what has happened legally or procedural, do you still hold the same view between, I think it's 2 months back when you said that, yeah, and today? Do you still hold the same view that it would have been better?
I hold it even strongly now, particularly because, you know, when you want to have integrity in an election, one of the things is that you've got to have a proper legal framework that governs those elections. Mm-hmm. Currently, as we're sitting here, there is an electoral amendment, Electoral Matters Amendment Bill,
yes,
that still has to be signed into law by the president. It's supposed to be applicable for these elections. Mm-hmm. And the elections are, you know, going ahead. So how do you begin to have an election where the legal framework has not been completed? If they had given themselves enough time to deal with all these issues, educate people about the implications of each and every aspect through voter education, and then have the elections at the last possible date. And then I had said that last possible date, it's that Wednesday on the 31st of July. I still believe that they should have done that. Mm. All these issues that are happening are really even convinced me more that this was rushed. We should not be having the elections now. We should have had the elections towards July, during the most, to allow the Electoral Commission also to run a smooth election.
Sure. Okay. As an election expert, Barateri, with 8 elections under your belt, why have we not gone digital in an age where digital surely would make more sense?
You know, processes in any organizations are driven at leadership level. If you've got people at leadership level who are very, very conservative, mm-hmm, they're not going to move with the times. And then that's what you have in the IEC. You've got people who are not really committed. We kept on pushing this, mm-hmm, for a long time. And I was responsible for electoral operations. And because I was responsible for electoral operations, issues of innovations and all that fell under me. So we ended up having, we had to do the desktop study on electronic voting. We had a consultative meeting with the political parties. The ANC and DA, firstly, were uncomfortable, but things have moved. Now, DA is running its elections electronically.
Yeah.
You know, so even the ANC is beginning to consider this thing in terms of one member, one vote.
Mm.
So, but at the IEC level, you need people who are committed to driving this process. And then I think you still have some people, unfortunately, who are still conservative and then who are reluctant to move with the times.
Fresh, you know, I hate to remind people that it was me on this platform months back when I said if elections goes digital, it is the DA and the ANC that I thought that time. I said, I think, I didn't have this information.
Mm.
They are the ones who will be against it because they stand more to lose. And when I explained that, I said more to lose because most of the voters will be youth. Youth will sit on their digital smartphones and vote.
Sure.
And that was the fear, which youth, black youth, the DA will use.
Mm.
Youth that are unhappy with the ruling party, they will obviously vote it out. So it doesn't come as a surprise to me that there is such information at hand. But again, that's a line. You see, this is where I said there's no independence in South Africa. The judiciary, the three arms of state, because the same leaders of, and you mentioned leadership, the same leadership of the IEC, which I think is a Chapter 9 institution, are being put into those positions by political office bearers. And for me, that has been the challenge in South Africa.
Mm.
The judges are elected by the president. The president is elected by the National Assembly or MPs. And the MPs recommend judges. The same as, you know, you say, who knows that the people who are sitting not only now, with due respect to the current leadership of the IEC, and you said this is old, this proposal, even those before the current leadership, who after 10, 15 years into democracy, they would have digitized. You know, the country is talking the fourth industrial revolution, yet they are leaving the elections behind, which could have been easy to reach even people. It would be cheaper to run elections electronically than printing ballot papers and risking and transporting them. And for me, it's very worrying. I hope and pray that the new leadership that will come, or even the current leadership of the ICE after these elections, they should apply their mind and change and look at the next elections, I think, are in 2029.
Sure.
We should go digital as a nation that is, you know, having resources in the country that we can digitize our elections, because I don't see any reason. People were arguing that it may be interfered with. As Professor explained, nothing is foolproof. Nothing is proof. Where does a human being, there'll always be errors. But we want, as a nation, to make things easy and possible for potential voters. And I think the IEC should be encouraged to go digital. That's my part in short. Thanks, Fresh.
Absolutely. Brother, thank you so much for your time. Much, much appreciated. Will I be seeing you at gym again soon? We used to meet at gym every day.
So we have quit now at gym.
No, now I've moved to another gym now.
Yeah. Okay.
I just want to make sure that he's still on the...
I heard that he was a runner even before, you know, and my sources have told me, no, he used to run as well. So, gentlemen, I promise you, I'll think about going to the gym after the elections. Yes, Let me see which political position I may be given on the side.
Brateri, is there a place people can go to see more of your work, to see what you do, maybe to engage your services? Maybe a website?
Yeah, we've got the website of IMSA.
Okay.
So
IEMSA, basically.
Yeah, IEMSA.
Okay. IEMSA.
Yeah.
.com.co.za. Okay.
Yeah.
So IEMSA.com.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, what does IEMSA do?
We manage elections, we provide support, we do training, we do thought leadership issues, also electoral issues. So basically everything on democracy and elections we do. We run quite a number, we've managed the elections for quite a number of organizations, almost all the political parties now, except one or two. Which one? I thought
maybe not
inappropriate.
Yes, maybe not. No, but Brateri, thank you very much for your service to the country and for your continued wisdom and imparting of knowledge. We see you and we appreciate you, Brateri.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a great privilege for me.
Yes, sir.
Now, thank you very much as well from my side for honoring the invitation. And I think our viewers and followers will realize that it's not only me and Fresh sitting here every week and imparting knowledge. There are things we learned today that
Absolutely.
We didn't know, but
yes,
it has
sir.
Been a great honor, Everett. We hardly have guests on the show. It's over just 14 months old, and I think you are our third guest on the show, and this is very special, and a person of your caliber. But as Fresh said, not only to the country, myself knowing you and the work you do, also to the continent. I know the role you have played all over Africa regarding democracy and elections. And for that, I think South Africa and the neighboring states as well as SADC, we're very thankful for that contribution for democracy in our continent. Thank you, Fresh, and thanks a lot.
And that's it with today's Politics Plus, coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out Pezulu Works for the cinematography, Otis the Floor Fraser for all of the imaging, our guest, special guest, Brateri Tselane from the Institute of Election Management Services. Our creative producer is Kuvesh Mohan. Show producer Kiliso Mudisakeng. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. From myself and Bozang, have yourself a great week in spite of yourselves.